How are you doing? Welcome to the Phantom Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed the show so far, like Blood of Kings, Culture Clash, and of course, Couch Potato Theater, then stay tuned for our cousin from down under, Adam O'Brien, with Lethal Mullet. Oh, g'day, my name is Alan. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia, it's Lethal Mullet, a celebration of 1980s action films. Everyone from Chuck Norris all the way up to Jean-Claude Van Damme and beyond. We're going to look at all the films that you know and some that you do not. All here, fortnightly, on the Phantom Podcast Network. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast here on Phantom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and tonight we're not going to be going into any reviews or anything. Tonight we're going straight into an interview with our dear pal here from Phantom Podcast Network himself, Blair Hiscock, of course, also My Saga Podcast and Pops Culture. We're going to be chatting about a great Chuck Norris film, which I think you're all going to love, and we're going to be chatting about action films in general from the big rays of the 1980s here on Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Here we go. All right, before we get into the episode tonight, here's where you can catch this show and many others like it on Phantom Podcast Network at fpnet.podbean.com, which is our main master feed. You also catch the actual show itself on the Podbean app. It's one of the greatest ways to check out the show. Also, if you like all the shows, you can catch them at all these different places where you can catch podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and of course, Google Play if you're an Android user. Now, also on social media channels, you can find us on Twitter at FanPod Network, and on Facebook, you can catch us at Fandom Podcast Network's page there at facebook.com/FandomPodcastNetwork. If you want to catch us on the email lines, email any ideas you have that the show might be able to cover, any other films you think that have been fantastic, you can catch us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host, Adam O'Brien, at obpopculture on Twitter and, of course, on Instagram as well, same handle. And don't forget to catch me on my other show, The Fanther from Down Under, a fortnightly look at Star Wars from Down Under on Fanther Tracks Radio or FanthaTracks.com. And also check out the great shows that I'm doing here on Phantom Podcast Network's Couch Potato Theatre, where we look at Mad Max with Maximum Couch Potato, and also our brand new show, The Spicing Guild, looking at the adaptations of Frank Herbert's Dune. Now, let's get into the show. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s retro action movie entertainment. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, joining me here all the way from Brisbane in Queensland. That is, of course, for you international listeners in Australia, we have the one, the only Blair Hiscock of Pops Culture and, of course, My Saga Podcast as well. Mate, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, Adam. How are you going tonight?
Fantastic, mate. Especially, we're going to be chatting some Chuck Norris very soon.
Huge. The man.
You know what's interesting? It's a great time to be a Chuck Norris fan right now because there's just so much coming out on the Blu-ray platform when it comes to Chuck. One of my favourites is, of course, Octagon. It has basically not had a good print for years, and then they finally did a DVD and Blu-ray release. I think it was last year or the year before, and it is actually half decent. It's quite a cleaned up print, and they go right into the history about the film itself.
Oh, okay, cool. It's got some good extras on it, has it?
It does, and we get that Aussie action star who even worked on Mad Max Fury Road, Richard Norton, which a lot of people probably remember. He was a karate stylist, I think, under Kate Sobrano's father, because Kate Sobrano's father was a karate stylist out here. Anyway, but Richard has gone on to become not only a great martial artist in his own right, but, of course, an action star as well, all the way through the late 80s, early 90s, and still today working in the industry as a professional when it comes to choreography, stunts, etc. He worked on Mad Max Fury Road, and, of course, also, I believe he worked on Suicide Squad as well.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, he gets around then.
He does. And a dear friend of Mr. Chuck, which I just think is fantastic. So before we get into it, what's your thoughts on actual Chuck himself? Like, what are the kind of things that you enjoy about Chuck Norris?
I just love his massive range of you know, acting skills. although not to be Steven Seagal probably sort of beats him out a little bit in that way, but I just like how he's just so seems to be so cool in every situation, no matter what it is. You know, he's the same when he's kicking butt as if he's, you know, being romantic with a lady. So he's just got that consistent one note that we all like, and that's, which is why, you know, Chuck is the legend that he is.
I agree. And I think one of the things is consistency in everything that he's done from all the way back in the early days of going up against the one, the only Bruce Lee. And obviously, you know, he was a teacher of Chuck's, you know. Obviously, he's a professional martial artist and ex-serviceman in the States.
Yep.
He learnt Tang Soo-do, which is, I believe, a Korean form of martial arts. And he's obviously started to do all sorts of different martial arts over the years. But one of the things I think is consistent about him is he's kept an iconic image all the way, even from like Good Guys Wear Black, all the way through you know, all the early sort of police drama and action films that he did, Missing in Action films. All those films had a consistent image of who he was, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he was the man of the 80s, really. I mean, you know, to me, he I mean, you know, Arnie and Sly and that, yeah, they are right up there. But I think back to the 80s, I think of Chuck. I really do. He was like the king of the drive-in for me. And I can remember, you know, a local drive-in, we would often have, like, Chuck Norris doubles. And they were like cheap nights. They were like about $4 to get in for two Chuck movies. And me and my mates used to just pile into the, you know, the station wagon, and there'd be like about half a dozen of us there just, you know, yelping and carrying on like idiots all the way through these movies. And that's what I remember. It was just, you know, a great time to be alive, basically. To be a teenager when all these films were coming out is just fantastic.
I've even found a couple of ones that I haven't seen since probably the 80s itself. Obviously, he was the big contract player for Canon films, which I think, you know, like, if we didn't have Canon films, we wouldn't have a lot of these action stars that we have today. It really, for a low-budget film company, they put out a hell of a lot of great material. I mean,
I tell you what, their movie posters were just fantastic, right? The artwork on them were just promised so much. And if I saw a Golan Globus production on any of those films, it made my little 19-year-old heart all glow with wonder. Looking forward to it. And yeah, usually, you know, the movies never came up to what they promised, but they were what they were. And I just loved every one of them.
I agree. And one of the things too is like they tried to do different stuff for Chuck. Like obviously he'd done the regular sort of routine action films, but even with Lou Gossett Jr., he got a chance to do something a bit like Indiana Jones and a lot of comedy in it with Firewalker, which a lot of people don't remember. I mean, that really was his chance to do something that was pretty much balls-to-the-wall comedy. And, I mean, it was a tongue-in-cheek Indiana Jones ripoff, like King Solomon's Mines. And actually, I do believe both of those had a certain Indiana Jones actor in them, even in Firewalker.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, John Rhys Davies.
Yeah, that's all.
I mean, the thing is, you know, it was just natural for Chuck to try his hand at comedy at some stage. I mean, you know, most of his movies are unintentionally funny, right? So I thought, well, let's give him something where it can actually be funny. But I must check on Firewalk again. I think I saw it on VHS back in the day, and I haven't seen it for years. So that's going to have to be one I think I'll be checking out.
I was pleasantly surprised. Like, it's it's not definitely not a solid film, like, but it's better than I thought, and it certainly lives up to the comedy sort of angle. And I think for Chuck, that's brilliant. I mean, he went on to do things like the movie Sidekicks. And a couple other things to break the mold a bit. And then, of course, we had a long run with Walker Texas Ranger. But tonight, we're going to be chatting about one of the all-time classics, and I think this film stands alongside some of the greatest Westerns. To me, this is a Western in a true sense, but I think it's a Western modernized. I mean, we've had a couple of modernized Westerns over the years, but this one's perfect because not only can he shoot with a gun, he can shoot with his feet.
This is true. This film is basically, I think, Chuck's signature role. When you look at all his roles, I always think of this film as far as, when I think of Chuck, I think of this film. So, have we said the name of the film?
We haven't yet. No, I was going to...
I'm thinking of going, hang on, have we actually told the people?
Yeah, that's right. We're talking about, of course, Lone Wolf McQuade. I mean, even the name of it alone sort of gives you a heroic title. I mean, Lone Wolf straight away gives me samurai images from the old Lone Wolf and Cub series. But Lone Wolf, Wolf McQuade means somebody that can obviously handle themselves, be tough. And, McQuade is a mysterious name. But, it is one of those films, isn't it?
Oh, look, the name in itself just sums up basically the movie for me. You know, what you've just said there, Lone Wolf McQuade, it's just smacks of badassery. So, I just from the name itself is just again promises so much. And actually, this film is one of the Chuck movies that really deliver.
Oh yes.
So, I've only had a bit of a refresher in the last couple of days. I only finished watching it about an hour and a half ago again.
Oh, brilliant!
And Just looking at it again to say this movie has everything.
Mm.
It has everything you want in a movie, you know. Just all put together in an hour and 50 minutes, you know. And I loved, I just loved watching it again. And, just great.
Obviously, Chuck is the centerpiece of this. And, looking back from when I first saw it as a kid, I remember a couple of things from the movie. Obviously, we're getting David Carradine. In this film, which it was interesting because I don't think David was a natural martial artist. Well, natural is probably not the word, but he hadn't been trained like the others had. You know, he had to learn a lot of that stuff for Kung Fu, for the TV series and stuff like that. So he's an actor first, foremost. Obviously, coming from a big traditional family, his father is extremely talented and famous actor. And obviously a huge range of different, members of his family went on to become great actors in their own right too. But what's interesting is that, you know, Chuck had an immense respect for David and the fact that, as good as I am a martial artist, I remember him saying this, I think it was in Trivia or so, where as good as he was a martial artist, David was an actor, you know, so there was that respect straight away. So they kind of, I suppose, would have taught them each other different tricks of their own trades in that way. But the other thing I remember was the truck.
Well, here we go. Yep, this is another part of my youth that, it opened my eyes to a lot of exciting possibilities. I mean, the truck is such a beast. And it's actually the first time that I actually saw a supercharger used in a film. Which created a love affair with her. I at the time, I remember I hadn't seen Mad Max yet, the original, the Australian Mad Max. Lone Wolf McQuade was my first exposure to such an engine. So, it was amazing. Especially there's a bit where he blasts out of his grave in the truck, and that was just perfect. I thought it was absolutely perfect. And it was just so exciting for me at the time.
I mean, you think about it, the character that, of Lone Wolf itself, to me, echoes the great gunslinger roles that Clint Eastwood played all through his years in Westerns. You know, right back to Hang 'em High and, Joe Kidd, you name it. Or, you know, even those sort of more, I suppose, not spaghetti Westerns, but the ones that he did in America when he came back. But what's great about the role is Chuck plays it like he's weathered, but he's also fresh at the same time, if that makes sense. Like, you can tell that, you know, here's a guy that could probably do as much as he can with his gun, but also you know straight away that he's capable of, you know, doing the same amount of damage with his hands and his feet.
Oh, yeah, and he's got that great, character too, that, he doesn't think before he just acts.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And, whereas, he commits himself completely to everything that he's doing, and that's back in the 80s, I suppose, our heroes would tend to be like, we're men of action, and yeah. Chuck certainly is a man of action in this film.
I think so. One of the things, too, is, you've got some great actors alongside it. You've got Barbara Carrera from Never Say Never Again. Unbelievable.
big fan of Barbara.
Barbara was always an interesting addition to any film. Yeah. Very talented, very beautiful.
She had a big year in 83. She had that, and she had Never Say Never Again with...
she did too.
Your mate Sean.
Yes, Sean.
Yeah.
Hello, Barbara. Thank you for coming. one of the great things about that movie, by the way, is a fan on YouTube has taken the original opening sequence of Never Say Never Again with that god-awful music that they put in. It's almost like a...
Never say never again. Sorry, listeners. Yeah, that's that one.
You got me singing it now too. But anyway, somebody stripped all the audio back, taken the exact same footage, and done the Eon Productions classic, even the whole opening of the, with the scope and everything, and the bullet hole, everything, like just the barrel, it's all there. Cool. And then the actual music is from, I think it's from Goldfinger, the start of Goldfinger. So, but anyway, I showed that to our dear friend and voice actor and Bond fan extraordinaire, Richard Epcar. And Richard's like, oh my God, this film is actually really good now.
I know we're talking about Lone Wolf, but Never Say Never Again, it is a good standalone Bond film.
It really is.
It really is.
It's Thunderball Redux, really.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I think that's the only script that Kevin McCrory, I think he had the rights to, so they doctored it up a bit and away they went. But, because it's a completely different company, it's not in the Bond thing, but I still include it,
So, oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But
anyway, back to Chuck.
We're going to chuck it back to Chuck.
Back to Chuck.
Yeah. So you get anything about Chuck's, time in the 80s, as he's coming up, obviously doing, cop dramas like he had been, and Good Guys Wear Black, where it's kind of, I suppose, a little bit more, it's almost like an earlier Delta Force in some ways, because there was a lot of that special forces sort of stuff going on. So Cannon knew what they had in Chuck as far as a product, and obviously, he delivered every time. To be perfectly honest, he was that sort of franchised action done right, because no matter what you got, it's a little bit like Arnold back in the 80s. Arnold was the same. You got that. What the minute you saw the name build, you knew what you were going to get. I think Chuck just kept delivering, and Lone Wolf, though, was a step, two or three steps higher than what he'd done previously.
Yeah, definitely. It was really like his big, movie in the early 80s that actually springboarded into a different sort of level.
Yeah.
And, it is actually quite a big film. I mean, it's an MGM film production. Yeah. It's wasn't like one of the smaller studios that, it is a decent in production. And, just the look of the film, it's great. Talking about Bond, I mean, it has some very Bondish top sort of elements in it itself too. I mean, you look at what's his name, Falcon, the small fellow in the wheelchair, David Frischman. He smacks of a Bond villain. He really, really does. He smacks of a Bond villain. And I was watching that again today, thinking, yeah, this guy deserves to. He should be in Moonraker or something. He's just got the whole thing down. But, I really enjoyed his performance, And,
it's great.
Everybody in this movie is great, I mean, Chuck's obviously, probably, as far as acting chops, he's probably the worst one out of it. It's just got a mishmash. It's like, you pour every genre of film, and you stir it in a big pot, and that's what Lone Wolf McQuade is. Look at it, it's just got, in an hour and 47 minutes, I think it is, it's just got everything. Everything you could ever want.
It really does. You got also a future Star Trek actor who will go on to become Chakotay in Voyager.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, gosh, yeah, he was young. He was young.
Very young in this one.
I actually enjoyed his performance in this film as well. You know, he was the sort of reliable sidekick officer there, with, you know, following him through thick and thin. And, yeah, it's the same old story we've seen a million times before. Like Dirty Harry had the same thing. He had a partner that he didn't, you know, want to hang around him, and he ends up coming good in the end. And, you know, he becomes somebody to rely on. And, yeah, there you go. There's another element in the movie that, you know, of a movie of elements.
I think this is one, too, where Chuck learnt to I think he was always calm. Like, he's, you know, no matter what role he's done, he was always calm, collected, particularly for the action scenes. You compare him to, say, somebody like Joe Louis, who did a film, Jaguar Lives, which is kind of like a James Bond ripoff. And stars a huge, huge part of Masters of the Universe film, and also the franchise of Highlander with the TV shows. The villain is basically the choreographer of that series. But anyway, well, I'll be talking about that one on another episode. But one of the great things about Chuck, he learnt, unlike Joe, who was kind of, if you watch that movie, for example, bring up Joe is that they're the same level of experience when it comes to real fighting, basically, you know, really experienced martial artists and competitors. But Joe, every time for a fight scene, you could see him sort of shaping up like he would be going into a fight instead of just being calm, because it doesn't translate on screen. It translates like the guy's panicking. But Chuck never did that. Chuck was calm, cool, and collected. In this film, he seemed at ease.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. I go back to his performance again. Yeah, some of his scenes with his wife and his daughter, and even with Barbara Carrera. It just seemed like he's trying too hard. You know, he's out of his comfort zone with those scenes. He does all right, you know, but you can just tell there's a scene there where he comes home and Barbara Carrera, or character Lolo, is cleaning up his little messy unit, that little house, and he, you know, basically throws her out, and, you know, and you can just tell it's just here we go. And the music is just so, you know, it was just so cheesy, but it was perfect 80s stuff. But you could really tell that Chuck was struggling, and they're working off each other, and you can tell that she's trying not to laugh. You know, you could see that they were just probably the best takes of so many takes to get what they got. And, which is great. So I think he sort of stretched himself a little bit in this film. And there again, in other movies too, later on down the track, Chuck, he did actually, you know, try and extend himself a little bit to his one note that he usually was.
I think, you know, a lot of the action stars really, you know, they were comfortable with doing the action. Yeah. Another perfect example is Jean-Claude Van Damme. On interviews, he is actually very entertaining, very calm, he, even to the point of doing his own comedy, like doing impressions and stuff like that. A lot of his stuff was doing impressions of Steven Seagal, you know, and cheeky bugger, you know. Like, but the thing is, then you go into a big budget movie like his ones. I think the big one that took him off was Hard Target with John Woo. And the opening lines of the movie, you know, like, so how was the gumbo, the meal that he was having, this French meal? He goes, a tragedy. The coffee was tolerable. Well, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah, the old Hard Target. Apparently, I saw an interview with John Woo about Hard Target once. He reckons it was actually a 3.5-hour cut.
I'd watch that.
I think the movie was just under an hour and a half. So I'm thinking, so what the heck did they film?
to make
it a 3.5-hour movie. I would like to see that cut one day.
Maybe it was Uncle Duvet, where, you know, where he says, "Where's my 30-odd six?" And he's like, "A gator ate it." So I want to see the alligator and him fighting over the M1 Garand. I'd actually pay to see that with that guy, you know, like it's, but anyway, yeah, like Chuck, I think really got what he was there for in each of these films, particularly Lone Wolf really got it straight away. He's the modern gunslinger, don't you think?
Yeah, Oh yeah, I mean he covers all bases. Like to say, it's a western. It's like a western. It's got Bond elements in it. It's a modern, you know, action film as well. It's a romance. You know, it's just so chock full. But this is for me the springboard movie for Chuck. You know, this is the one I think of Chuck Norris. I think of Lone Wolf McQuade, and then of course he went on the Texas Walker, which was basically, you know, Lone Wolf's cousin, really.
It's
just basically the same character, you know, but in a television series. And obviously he knew his strengths and he stuck to it. And he was like, well, Lone Wolf, as far as popularity, was probably, you know, the biggest movie that he actually had. So they carried on with that similar sort of narrative, and the success it turned out to be as well.
It was brilliant. What I think too is a lot of people forget that David Carradine, had done obviously Kung Fu. He even did, I think he did
Grasshopper.
Yeah, that's right. But and I think he even did like a newer version of it much later in the early 90s with it might have been just a telly movie where Brandon Lee came back into that film, and it was kind of like a way to mend, you know, some of the heart that was broken, you know, like Bruce obviously was meant to star in that, and you know, it was ripped out from under him. And really, I mean, it's not Carradine's fault. Carradine just came in to do a job. But what's great about, obviously, he can play good guys and bad guys, no drama at all, plays it extremely well. I mean, I thought one of his better ones was Walter Hill's movie about Jesse James, The Long Riders, where he played Cole Younger, I think, if I remember right, out of the younger brothers that were part of the gang. And he brought in his other brothers, the other Carradines, Keith and... Keith and Robert, if I remember Robert, right. That's right. And he had the Quaid brothers in there, Dennis and Randy, and had the Keaches, Stacey and James as well, which was interesting too. But and that's one of the best westerns from the 80s as far as gritty, no mucking around, and plenty of blood. You know, they didn't skimp on that. As Walter Hill, I mean, it was, you know, Walter Hill was pretty much the John Ford of gunslinging action movies of the 80s, you know. But but what I loved about Carradine is he could do that in any film. Then he did Bird on a Wire a few years later with Mel Gibson and Goldie Hawn. That's right, yeah. And again, played, I think it was a bit more tongue in cheek, the bad guy, but just he relishes those bad guy roles.
Oh, definitely, yeah, yep. And of course, they'll always, you know, for me, he's always. Either Grasshopper or Bill at a Kill Bill.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, he can play scary really well.
Oh, definitely.
And Bill was just, he took it to another level in those movies as well. But I loved him in Kung Fu. I have both seasons, and when I first got it, I ended up watching season one straight through. You know, I think it was a matter of about 2 or 3 days. I'd gone through the whole 24 episodes or something. Back in the day when we get 24 episodes or something.
I know.
But every episode was quality. And every episode, you know, was a great lesson. And that's what I loved about it. And he really sold that, you know, with his character. I can remember there's also, just quickly in Kung Fu, I remember I was watching one night and all of a sudden Harrison Ford pops up in Kung Fu. You know,
oh, really?
Yeah, he's about 24 or something like
Bloody
that.
Bloody hell. Didn't know that.
Yeah, it was really, really strange. All of a sudden, it took you out of it a little bit. And you thought, that's Harry. You know, it was really cool. But no, he did really well on that show too. So, yeah, I love David Carradine. He's great. He's just got that, you know, look about him, you know, where you just wouldn't cross him. But, you know, lovely man. But, he'll always be Bill to me.
Oh, definitely. If anyone wants to see a young Harrison Ford in a Western, and it might have even been earlier than Kung Fu, actually, I think, it was a Jimmy Kahn movie called, I think it was called Shiloh, or The Battle for Shiloh, might have been.
Yes, probably Shiloh, Battle for Shiloh.
And he's got a bit of a mullet in that one, if I remember right. Like, the hair is
well,
going
to... mullet in Kung Fu as well. So
nice.
They've been around the same sort of time. But, but as far as the other way, I also love Frisco Kid, Harrison Ford.
I haven't seen that one. I've seen
You've never seen it? No. Mate, that is fantastic. Just get off the subject again for a second. It came out in about 1979, and it's Harrison and Gene Wilder. And Harrison was, you know, it's just after Star Wars and just between after Star Wars and before he did Indiana Jones. So it's in that about 79 it came out, and it's just a great comedy. It's got everything. It's got action. It's funny. Gene Wilder's hilarious in it, and it's well worth a look. It's actually one of my favourite Harrison Ford movies.
Oh, brilliant. You have to check it out. Now, one of the things we have here at Phantom Podcast Network, particularly with Lethal Mole, is especially the owners of this channel, the one, the only, Kyle Wagner, and, of course, the one, the only, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel, have they call first dibs, where we bring up which Chuck Norris films we're going to be doing. And Kev's already been firing away each time trying to get his take on it, but if you could choose another Chuck Norris film to do that's not Delta Force, that's not this one, which one would you choose and why?
I would probably go, hang on, let me just, Invasion USA.
Oh, damn. Kevin's put dibs on that one. yeah, he's...
We got Octagon, Invasion USA. Well, I really like Missing. I sound a bit like Sean Connery then. Really like Missing in Action too.
We might have to do that one then, I think.
I mean, it's a great movie in itself. It's like a standalone film, even though it's, you know...
Yeah, it is.
It's not really it's actually a prequel to Missing in Action. The first one, same character. And then I remember Missing in Action 3 had nothing to do with the previous movies whatsoever. Well, it was just like, you know, no consistency at all. But it's a fantastic movie, Missing in Action 2. It's set in, you know, camp in Vietnam, and they're POWs, and, you know, they've got to get out. It's, you know, it's like a bit of a great escape sort of thing. And everybody in the film is on top form, and Chuck is really, really good in the movie. And the villain in the piece, the Vietnamese fellow, there's Soon Teko. He's just great. This film is just great. So I reckon, Mission Action 2, the beginning. Missing Action 2, the beginning. Oh, for God's sake. Anyway, don't mind that, listeners. It's just my phone going off I've thrown out that it's still going.
Might be Sean calling going, are you trying to say Missing?
Yeah, trying to say Missing, that's for sure. Hang on. Stop. Sorry about that. Missing.
Missing.
It's definitely, I think, one that needs to be looked at.
Definitely. Now, folks, one of the things we've been talking about just off air before we came on is some of the great films that you should really be getting out in the stores and picking up now, because I can tell you, folks, DVD stores are starting to close. It's happening all over the place. Even department stores are stopping to have these hard copies of films. And as we were chatting to Blair earlier, a lot of these films are only going to be available on the streaming platforms, which I personally, I don't know how you feel about that, Blair, but I don't like the idea of not having hard copy.
Well, Kevin and Kyle and myself are actually going to be doing a series of physical media versus digital downloads. So it's going to get quite ranty, I think, when we do that episode. But I'm a big physical media guy myself. I mean, to me, movies are films are like books.
Yeah,
I don't like digital copies of books. Yeah, they're convenient. You can read them on your iPad, but you like the smell of paper. You like something tactile in your hand, and I'm the same way with movies.
Yeah.
I've got to actually feel like my feeling of ownership is that. You've actually got to feel like you own something. And with a download, with a digital file, I don't have that feeling of ownership.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I like to... Yeah. And the thing is, too, is with films now, I mean, a lot of these classic movies, they're not going to be putting on streaming. You're not going to be able to see a lot of it, you know. So one thing I actually do is I go around to, you know, some of your cash converters type sort of stores like that, and I just look for old films, look for films that you're not going to be seeing on streaming, because
that's right,
you know, and picking them up, because it's a dying thing. It's very, very sad, but I love my physical media.
Mm. Same here, 100%. And I mean, the thing is, now I'm able to find some of these old classics. One of the ones which just is hard to find, you can't get it on Blu-ray as far as I've seen so far, is this bad boy here, Gene Hackman's Uncommon Valor.
No, I don't think I've... Oh, not in Australia, I haven't seen
it. No, that's right. I was very lucky to find that at the time. Again, one of those many stores that's just closing down. You know, you're just not available around the place. But, I mean, having said that, they're still releasing new ones at the same time, the same shop, where we found Schwarzenegger's Killing Gunther.
Yeah, I watched half of that.
If you find it for $5, pick it up. Anything over $5, okay. Don't.
No, okay.
Because you're literally paying for the amount of minutes that Arnold's in the film. That's right.
It's, okay.
Yeah, because you may as well fast forward to the last 5 minutes of the movie, but it's an interesting premise. So the idea of this film is that there's a bunch of assassins and killers that are hired to take out a hired killer by the name of Gunther. And you get to see all of what Gunther does throughout the entire film from their perspective. So obviously they couldn't afford Schwarzenegger. That was the whole thing about this movie. So they hired him and they talk about him all the way through the movie. And then Arnie finally turns up. He goes, wait, I'm going to kill all of you. I'm going to do it now.
They paid me the budget of the movie for my 5 minutes. Yeah.
There is one actor from Star Wars Resistance in this. I'm trying to think of the name. Bobby Moynihan is in this as well.
Okay.
So, and he's quite good. He's probably the funniest in the movie. Now, we're also talking about an action star that should have been Jeff Speakman, The Perfect Weapon. You got to see this in the cinemas, mate. How good is that?
I did. I'm showing my age, aren't I? I think I was in my mid-20s when that came out. I remember going with a couple of mates to see it the first weekend it came out, and I remember I enjoyed it. I think I've seen it. I haven't seen it for years. I think I saw it on VHS once since then, but I do remember... you remember the film, and actually, I mean, he had such a great physique as well.
Definitely.
Speakman, really, really. And I think at the time, he's a good-looking fellow. He's got a great physique. He knows how to move. This guy could be the next big thing action-wise, you know, and he just seemed to fizzle into nothing after that. It was a great, a bit gritty sort of film. Yeah, he had some fantastic moves in it.
He definitely did. One of the scenes I liked, he walks into the nightclub and literally just tears apart the entire dance floor, all the bouncers. And, you know, his uncle, Kim, got killed, so he's after answers. And he literally picks up everybody and goes, who killed Kim? just keeps knocking the crap out of him. You know, and I loved it. It was just really well put together. Another one I've been found, and we may even talk about on a future episode, is Time Bomb, which is starring... Mm-hmm. Patsy Kensit and, of course, Michael Biehn. But also, if you're a Babylon 5 fan and a fan of Crusade, Tracy Scoggins is in this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and she's fantastic in it. Also, from Greatest American Hero, Robert Culp.
Oh, I love Robert Culp.
He's great, isn't he?
He's always the man from Uncle.
Yeah, that's right, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, that was... That was probably his big claim to fame, but yeah, I loved him in Greatest American Hero too. Great.
Oh, it's brilliant. Now, before we wrap, one thing I'm going to be doing in the next couple of weeks, whether we do it on probably Couch Potato Theatre, we're going to be looking at the original. I've been wanting to do this for a little while. I actually don't know whether the boys may have even touched on this, perhaps, or even maybe the new series, but I want to have a double episode looking at the original miniseries and the second one, which minute you mentioned to Kevin, the Raider nerd Ratzel, that Mark Lionside is on the second one.
General. What's his name? I can't remember his name in the movie. Yeah, I became a huge fan of Michael Ironside.
He's great. And of course, Ironside was General Katana, Connery likes to say in Highlander, Don't Watch Me. Number two, The Quickening.
Mm. So, is there a number two?
I don't know if there is.
Advantageous having it been called Highlander number two. It's anyway. Well, you know, like the tagline says, there can be only one, and that's how it is for me with that franchise. But
definitely.
Yeah, he did well, Michael Ironside, with the part that, you know, what he was given with. But yeah, it was basically, you know, sort of a watered down version of the Kurgan, you know, and that was basically. You know, any Highlander villain, cinema-wise, always seems to be, you know, playing off the Kurgan.
And
it was no exception with him, I thought. You know, he didn't bring much depth, I thought, to his character compared to just growling and, you know, trying to act mean.
Well, that's right. I think he had more fun as Richter in Total Recall.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the party, Richter. Okay, the party, Richter. Yeah.
You're going to try and get Cohagen. Too bad, sir. Yeah. I've got sunspots. Yeah.
Of course, don't forget Top Gun as well.
What was he? Viper.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Viper. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which we got a new one on the way.
He was really good. Now. He does it really well. He does Tough really well as well. He's done a few B-grade sort of action movies himself, I think, where he was the major star, the main character, but... Sort of like shuffled in the back row, like where Frank Stallone's movies are, you know.
Oh yes, Frank Stallone. Actually, I was listening to a it was a podcast with Andrew Dice Clay. He was talking about his work with Frank Stallone. It might have been actually on the Joe Rogan show. So go and check that obviously out there. But Frank's a bit of a legend when you think about it.
Oh, he is.
Musically
as well, he's amazing. Man. Yeah, really good.
The first time I saw him was in Hudson Hawk.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's done all the – he did a song for Rambo 2, I think, and he did, I think, a couple of songs for Rocky Pictures as well.
I think he did the music for Staying Alive as well, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the music for that. You're going to have Stallone director Staying Alive with John Travolta and this is sort of the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, but I'm pretty sure Frank was heavily involved in the music for that as well.
Oh, it's brilliant. The one of the things too is that Frank is also into all the fitness stuff as well. He was, I think it's on his Instagram page. If you follow him on his Instagram page, there's quite a bit of stuff involved with him hanging around Sylvester and also. Just in the gym doing work and stuff like that too. Not quite the same level as Sylvester, but still good to see somebody of his age out there keeping fit. Brilliant. I mean, his music has been known out here in Australia for years. I do remember him doing tours here too.
Okay. Yeah, he might have come here a couple of times. But actually, it's quite funny. We've got a bit of a record collector type sort of shop here in Carindale Shopping Centre here in Brisbane, and I was in the other day, and in the window is all this Stallone merchandise, and that actually was Frank Stallone's merchandise that he's actually getting rid of.
Oh,
and
they've
all got certificates of authenticity and stuff like that, and I'm going, wow, I had all these like letters from Frank saying, you know, Sylvester gave me this when we did, then he had like Rambo jackets and everything else that this place is selling for him. And I was just like, wow, it's like a bit of a Stallone museum, you know. And, like little plastic toy machine guns from Rambo and stuff that he'd been given and all this sort of thing. But it's actually his stuff that he's selling off. So I mean to have a bit of a chat to the boys who run the shop and see what the story is, you know.
Well, definitely might be worth looking into. Now, obviously, listeners, you can catch a lot of what Blair does in this very channel on Phantom Podcast Network. What else have you got on Phantom Podcast coming up with the boys?
Well, we just finished last week the podcast about Bohemian Rhapsody, and that was very enjoyable to do, being a big Queen fan myself.
Mm-hmm.
So go and check that one out. That's out now. We do have, I think it's a two-part series that we're doing on digital media versus physical media. It's covering a few of the things that we've discussed tonight in a lot more in depth. So I'm not sure when that's going to be, but that's coming up as well. Mm-hmm. And I think... there's an episode of the films of 1985 that we're going to be hitting a few things there as well. So, a couple of things coming up in the works.
Absolutely brilliant. And obviously you're part of both My Saga and run your own YouTube channel called Pops Culture. Where can the listeners find those?
Pops Culture is just on YouTube. So just if you just key Pops Culture into search engine, you'll come up with my smiling face holding a Star Wars action figure, and just go on the channel and you'll see my videos. I haven't done one for a little while, but I am keen to probably get into that. It's been a bit busy of late, so but I do intend to do that. And my saga with Adam Harris is our weekly Star Wars podcast that we do. And that as well is on iTunes under My Saga. And we have page on Facebook and YouTube. We have a channel as well under My Saga. So just search for that and you'll come up with us as well.
Awesome. I want to thank to Blair for coming on the show today. And Stay tuned, folks, because there's a lot more Chuck Norris on the way. And, hey, we haven't even started with Arnold yet. Wait till we start with Arnold.
That's it. I mean, where do you start with Arnold?
You started, he needed food, so he did a movie called Stay Hungry. Come on.
A movie. Yeah,
a movie.
Yeah.
Movies, plural.
Arnold, a man and his movies.
Fantastic movies. With Ivan Reitman, the fantastic director. Now.
Yeah, that's it. Nah.
Now.
Yeah, you do it so well.
Oh, my goodness. We have to do an episode just on how people yelled in these movies, you know, whether it's, you know, or Van Damme, you know, or was it Dolph Lundgren? You know, all these crazy war cries that they had back in the day. But huge thanks to Blair for being on the show. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back in the next fortnight with, I do believe, Invasion USA with Kevin the Reader Nerd Reitzel. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
In 1965, a novel would be released that would change science fiction forever. A piece of mythic storytelling about a hero. A hero that would become the leader of the entire universe. An emperor of the known universe. This was a science fiction novel like none other that had multiple amazing storylines weaving intricate plots about the future of humanity. This was about the planet Arrakis, otherwise known as Dune. Here on the Spicing Guild, a special three-part podcast, part of the Couch Potato Theater series of shows, we'll be looking at David Lynch's 1984 adaptation of the Frank Herbert novel. We'll also be looking at the 2000 miniseries by Sci-Fi Channel, and also the 2003 Children of Dune miniseries. Throughout the podcast, we'll also be covering parts of the novels and, of course, the universe of Dune. Hosted by Adam O'Brien, the Fantha from Down Under from the Fantha from Down Under podcast, and, of course, Fantha Tracks Radio, and co-founding member of Phantom Podcast Network, Kyle Wagner, all here, chatting Dune. The podcast must flow.
Here's where you can find all the great shows on Phantom Podcast Network. You can go to podbean.com, where we are at fpnet.podbean.com. It's a great way to check out the show, or even download the Podbean app off iTunes or maybe Google Play. Phantom Podcast Network on social channels. You can also find us on Twitter on the handle at FanPodNetwork. You can also catch us at Facebook on facebook.com/Phantom Podcast Network. You can show all the shows on your iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or Google Play for Android users. If you'd like to contact us directly, you can find us at
on email at
fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch me, the host of the show, here at Obi Pop Culture on both Twitter and Instagram. To get your own Fandom Podcast Network t-shirts and other apparel, please visit Fandom Podcast Network store on TeePublic. On iTunes, please leave us a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. We love 5-star reviews, of course, but we love general feedback. Please listen to our other podcasts on the Phantom Podcast Network master feed at fbnet.podbean.com. Check out Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. You also catch Culture Clash, the weekly pop culture show. We also have Couch Potato Theatre, the guilty pleasure favourites. We also have Time Warp, the Phantom Flashback podcast. If you're into American football, why not check out The End Zone with Kyle Wagner and, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. We also have, if you're an Alfred Hitchcock fan, The Good Evening Show. If you're into Star Trek Discovery and, of course, The Orville, you can catch us at Discoville. Also, if you're into Poison, Guns N' Roses, and, as Kevin's brought up, LA Guns, check out the amazing hair metal podcast, which is hosted by Kevin himself. So go and check that out. Also, check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, all on the Master Feed, on the Podbean page. Be sure to email in any movies you'd like us to check out here on the show. And, of course, make sure they're big red and make sure they're good. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next fortnight on here at Phantom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet. G'day, mate. How you going? I'll see you later.